Willkommen auf der EduCouch, dem Podcast des Instituts für Digitales Lernen. In dieser Folge mit freundlicher Unterstützung von Bettermarks, dem adaptiven Lernsystem. Auf der EduCouch diskutieren wir über Bildung. Mit Menschen, die etwas zu sagen haben, die eine digitale Zukunft gestalten wollen, die der Gesellschaft den Spiegel vorhalten. Wir glauben nicht mehr an die Schule der Vergangenheit und wollen die Bildung des 21. Jahrhunderts mitgestalten. Zuhören, nachdenken, diskutieren. Und los geht's.
Today we have two very exciting people in our EduCouch podcast. Our guests are Mr. Sigurd Tryggvason, Managing Director of the National Digital Learning Arena in Norway, and Mr. Matthias Fischbach, Member of the State Parliament in Bavaria and Member of the Education Committee. Welcome.
Thank you.
In today's episode, we are trying to learn from one another across national borders. Okay. First of all, I want to go one step back to see the bigger picture. What have Norway and Bavaria basically done right in education and digital education in the last 10 years in general? And what, in your opinion, really went wrong in the last 10 years? Which decisions have been set correctly and where are they going off track? Mr. Tryggvason, what is your opinion on that?
I thought it was a very heavy and difficult question for me to answer. But I have done some reflections on the right things, the positive developments in the school in Norway. Before I came to NDLA, I was an assistant principal at the school in Bergen area for the last 9 years. I think some of the positive things has been the continuous development, investment in ICT, and the focus on the emergence of new technologies and what it can be, how it can be applied in the teaching and learning, and competence building among teachers. These things takes time. I also see that we the last few years have changed the national curricular schemes where we have updated our with increased focus on learning, activity-based learning, in-depth learning, across disciplinary themes and important skills for the 21st century. That's a positive thing. And cross-disciplinary themes, which are now implemented in the national curricula, is sustainable development, democracy and citizenship, and public health and life skills. It's probably something you recognize throughout Europe. During the period, it has also been increased focus on dropouts. And in Norway, we have especially challenging within vocational education. When I was at this school, I had some cooperation with Oldenburg. And I learned to know some of the vocational education systems in Germany. And it's I think you have you are good in this area. But the increased focus on dropout, we still struggle with the dropout. There has also been an increased focus on universal design and the inclusion of all. And in Norway, there has also been positive intentions of building one school for all. All students follow the same curricula the 10 first years, and then they choose between a vocational or a preparatory plan for university and professional higher education. The positive and so the challenges. There are some researchers in Norway, they say that we have focus on the well-being of the students. What about learning? It's of course the students need to feel good in order to learn, but the the kind of the balance here has been challenged. Dropout is a challenge, especially in vocational education. And I think some little flexibility in the one school for all has the opposite of maybe two standardized programs and or the perception of little flexibility. And also then we have the ambitions for changing the teaching and learning, but the exam systems tend to be conservative. So there may be some tension between an ambition to change and some systems to monitor the learning results.
To sum it up in one sentence, are you happy what happened in the last 10 years in Norway?
So, you know, it's not black and white. It's in the gray mode, I guess. But many positive things. And of course, in Norway, we also spend a lot of resources in education. And it's trying and trying to invest in the teachers.
So, Mr. Fischbach, what is your opinion on the last 10 years in education in Bavaria? Are we on the right track or are we off track?
Well, the main point is I think there is no bigger changes that have happened in the last 10 years, except for the crisis now. The main development we have seen is a change in the secondary education system. The gymnasium, the highest level of secondary education system schools, was changed in its length. So it used to have 9 years before the year 2011, then had 8 years until we have changed again. So we are now again on the track to have a 9 year length for this secondary school. This is the main topic we had in the last 10 years, I think. And we, concerning digital education, we had a little program that started in 2017-18, just before an election, maybe a coincidence. However, it was not the worst program. They started a digital classroom program, so schools were financed with individual budgets to buy their digital stuff for the classroom, basically smart boards and this kind of things. So far, the first round of this initiative went very good. So basically, all schools participated and had one or two or three classrooms changed for a digital version of it. However, most of the classrooms haven't participated in this, and also they stopped the program just at the beginning of the year 2019, because there was an initiative on the federal level, which is called Digitalpakt, digital, the different states in Germany and the federal level decided that they agree on money coming from the federal level, which is not quite used in our system, because they have prohibited it, this kind of influence from the federal level in order to have clear responsibilities for the state level. However, they now started this kind of experiment, and to give you a little view on the results, it was started at the beginning of the year 2019 again, and the first possibility to get money from it was, or to demand money from it, was at the end of 2019. However, until now, from 778 million euros that were provided for Bavaria, only 43 million euros were also given free for use at the moment. So most of this program was not used yet. It was too much bureaucracy, probably too much or too slow processes to implement it on the state level, and still no pressure to really push this into the schools, even after this pandemic, or after 1 year of this pandemic. This is the number, 43 million from over 700 million. This is basically some kind of failure, I would say. So I'm not very happy about what happened also in digital education. We could have been much further than we are now. We could have also given every student an own digital device. We haven't. So there's a lot to still implement, a lot to still develop further, to also find some framework for future digital initiatives. And this is only for the techniques. So it's nothing about pedagogic influence. So we have to talk about teachers' education. I have just recently asked the government, what do you have on the university level? What is provided for future teachers on modules about digital learning? And they answered, we cannot answer you. This would require too much research at the universities to find out. I think this is no excuse for not answering. They have basically no answer. They have not implemented it. So that's what I have also heard from the students' perspective. So basically, this is still quite poor, which we have, what we have there. There are some little initiatives to have some so-called digi labs. So some rooms which get also implemented with those digital machines or stuff. But yeah, overall, I would say we are still a developing country in concerning digital education. It's poor for our own ambition, but basically that's what we have to say.
Mr. Tragiton, you started over a decade ago with this kind of digital education you're doing now. So what happened when Corona came around? What happened to the Norwegian school system? Did it also break down, or what happened?
What we experienced at Underlay was a 40% increase in traffic in March 2020. And for the whole year of 20, we had an increase of traffic in 24%. So for our tasks, we had a good experience of being useful to many more students and teachers. In the schools, I think the situation was a steep learning curve for many teachers and students. In March 2020, all schools in Norway closed down. But after a few weeks, some schools opened, and Norway is a country with where some parts there has been very little exposure to Corona. So many schools has been partly opened. It has been stressful for the teachers to continue reorganize some homeschooling, some in schools, and different rules. But in a way, it went better than we were afraid of, maybe the pessimists. But I think the teachers are quite exhausted. But then again, and we see now research that vulnerable students has had a tough time in this regime of homeschooling and decreased social being together. And of course, the length of the pandemic is also exhausting. We thought that last summer that this was over, and I hoped it was more over and we would have control. So all in all, it has been a tremendous also possibility for learning and change the way of how you do things. And we were kind of prepared because much of the learning and teaching in Norway is already in platforms. You mentioned the trouble with your learning LMS, but they had the same problems with its learning and all other platforms in Norway as well in March. They broke down. So we are very proud to stay open, but it's another kind of a system then.
Yes. Mr. Fischbach, you already mentioned some of the impacts of the corona measures in Bavaria, but do you also see potentials? What could change now? What could get better now? Or is it just a way downwards in Bavaria?
Yeah, well, I have the hope that we think further, that we give the individual schools more responsibilities to decide on their own. I think if they can be innovative, if they can just try something out, they will be better than we just develop the best solution on the state level and never finish, which is what we basically experience in digital developments in Bavaria. Always we have discussions about a so-called Bayern cloud, Bavarian cloud, which was announced a year ago, and we haven't seen any more details about the concept yet. It's not convincing. It's not convincing what's happening on the state level. So we have to give the schools more responsibilities. I think that's the one hope I have. The other hope is that we also keep open for the idea of digital learning, that we don't have a fallback to the times before when schools were stopped by the authorities using, for example, flipped classroom concepts. We have to get away from this mentality. We have to open up for new concepts, for new ideas. I think that's the hope, the second hope we can have.
Mr. Trageton, what question would you like to ask Mr. Fischbach? What problem could he possibly help with? Or are you so happy in Norway you don't need help at all?
I think we have a lot to learn from talking with other and have international cooperation within education. And we all know that the Bavaria region is a very important region in Germany. And we also know that you have high quality and high ambitions for education. And I think we have a lot to learn in maybe in vocational education. This is also the conclusion of the OECD that look to Germany. I'm also, so I think we have a lot to learn and would like to cooperate. And we also think that the concept of Andele with the OVR, Open Educational Resources, both Germany and Norway has are eager to follow the United Nations ambitions on education and also the UNESCO's adoption of the OER. So, and the possible potential and synergies of cooperation between the public sector taking care and taking care of the OER, supporting the OER, could even increase the synergies and values for our cooperation. So that's talking to a politician and being lucky to talk to a politician in Bayern. This is my message, to support OER as a means to build the modern inclusive knowledge society.
So, Mr. Fischbach, what would you ask Mr. Trageton?
Yeah, I think we should connect together to talk about the questions you have asked me about the vocational system or the implementation of OER or maybe some cooperation in this. But one thing is in my mind, which I'm really asking you, how did it work that you have had this cooperation between the counties? Because what we always experience in Germany is a discussion that tends to central solutions. Like, we now have a discussion about getting maybe also the whole educational system away from the states and placing it at the central federal level, which I think would destroy the competition between states. So what can we do to improve the cooperation between states in order to also increase the acceptability of the solutions we have, so that we have more standards that are quite commonly set in the whole country? How did it work? I mean, I've heard from you at the beginning that there's always one county responsible for a certain task in this whole platform. And however, I ask myself, how can you still have an innovative element in there if there's so much cooperation and coordination in this whole system? How can you get the innovation and still keep the innovation in the system?
The NDLA is one alternative in the Norwegian market for learning didactics. The counties spends about 20% of the budget for learning resources on this cooperation. I think there was a question in the interview, how what of the key elements for the success of NDLA? And I think in Norway, there is a tradition for cooperation. The municipalities and counties are small, and some tasks demand cooperation. I think we had some dedicated and visionary pioneers, including directors and key personnel in the start of the NDLA. They saw a potential regarding the change of legislation. And there has been sustained support by the politicians and county schools directors, trusting the capabilities of their own teachers, taking care of this concept. So the NDLA is made from teachers to their colleagues in schools. I think the concept of OER has challenged the traditional way of thinking about learning materials. And it's a different world from books, where you have variable costs, to the digital. And then I think we have succeeded keeping an eye on quality. And we have been able to proving the ability to deliver didactical material of high quality. And we have done this by recruiting dedicated teachers. There are enough teachers that want to come to NDLA to work on this. They know the student groups. And we have extensive work with pilot schools in order to test and check if the things we are making are relevant and foster learning. And then we have also resources for quality control of the content that we are producing, which is language quality assurance and universal designs. So I think we have succeeded by delivering this quality level. And then again, the resource efficiency of this way of producing content is convincing. We have an annual budget of 9 million euros. And if divided on 200,000 students, then you have a price for about 45 euro each student, and you have course material in 106 different subjects. So it's a way of, and we have still a lot of potential for harvesting OER resources globally and adapt them to Norwegian learning materials. So it's a very convincing model. And also you were talking about how do we keep the development, keep developing. We think that we, a few years ago, we invested heavily in H5P, It's a global standard. We said it has to be open source code. And there is no a company in Tromsø that has a global service as H5P.com. They host this source, and we use it heavily, and we have invested heavily in different content types which make interactive experiences on NDLA and other. And this framework of code has been implemented in Moodle and Canvas and WordPress, so it's a global thing, and we like to think we are one of the investors in this, so the public can invest and the society can harvest. So this is also an example of that we have been, and now we are asked to be part of national programs for talking about the quality of learning materials and things like that. So it's a kind of a success story that the public sector has managed to invest some money and get quite good payoff on the investments. But of course, we are ambitious. We want to advance learning and we want continuous development. And for this, we need to cooperate with Bayern.
So can I ask another question?
Yes, please do.
I'm very interested about how many students, which share of the students does actually use your material, or concerning the teachers, how many teachers use your material, and how hard is the competition with the private sector? How cooperative is it? I mean, there may be some incentive for the county level to just focus on the own provided software or their own provided learning platform, and sometimes get the school books from other providers out of the system. So is there any tendency in this direction, and how do you benchmark your results?
The private sector was not very happy about the NDLA initiative, and they claimed us for the ESA, ESA, that says that this is not the legal things to do. In 2014, the ESA decided that the NDLA was a legal activity, and the private sector then had to try to cooperate with us. One effect of NDLA is that there has about 45 till 50% of the budget of NDLA is for buying things in the market. We buy content to publish. We buy videos, we buy animations, we buy texts to put on the NDLA, and also as well as using teachers producing things. So we have a cooperation with the private sector in order to deliver the results. Regarding use of the site, we have about, on a weekly basis, we have about 250,000 visitors, and they come for, and we have 500,000 visits. So it's quite, what is good and what is not good. I think the lots of students and teachers are using NDLA in Norway, but it's kind of difficult to measure precise, as we are an open website. We don't have any logins, so we don't know whether it's a teacher or student or a student from upper secondary that comes and borrow and uses our resources. Another important point for us is that when we see that the educational system changes and we have lifelong learning, and NDLA being open is also accessible for people outside school, people in their companies, people in jails, having needing resources in order to qualify for the for the vocational or university studies. So, we are in cooperation with the private sectors. They would like us not to be there, but they would try to cooperate. And of course, they say that it's not good that NDLA is in Norway because we should have this money in order to advance the learning materials. But I think the politicians see the resource and economies of scale, and that we are able to deliver quality at the same level as the private sector does.
Concerning the other users, which are not coming from the school systems, does your material have a clear focus on the curriculum of the schools, or is it more broadly split around all topics that can be interesting for education?
It is targeted to the, we have a definition that says didactic material. Then that's a learning resource that is labeled to the kind of courses or the competence goals a certain learning resource can be used to accomplish. So we have most of our resources are so-called learning didactics material. But we also have some resources that can be used for instance, study techniques, how do you do a good research? It can be used in several subjects, more general-like.
So a teacher can just look into his learning plan and say, okay, I need something for this competence, and looks it up, and then how many different learning materials do you have then there? Is this like you have one version normally for one part of the curriculum, or do you have like a whole variety of, or how can a teacher decide what material to choose?
Yeah. We structure all the resources are labeled and to a certain competence goal objective. I think you have the same type of system in Germany. And then we have organized the material in the study programs, and the study programs have sections and themes. So this is the way of organized resources, but of course you can also just search for different themes, and a teacher in Norway can look at the resource and find, well, I can also use this in this setting. It will work fine. So the teacher is the one that decides what kind of material to use in the class.
Does he have different material for one section, for example?
Yes.
Okay.
But do you have like 100% material for 100% of your curriculum?
Yes. Yes. We have, yes, that's correct. But then we see that the Norwegian teachers, they don't go into NDLA and take all the material for the course and use it. They go in and see, okay, this looks good. And then they go to the commercial thing, because in the schools they can buy also, they have a budget for buying digital resources in the private market as well.
Is it possible to buy the digital material from another company using your platform, so it's implemented into your platform?
No.
So they have to use other software from somebody else. Okay.
Yes. We have some plans for in Norway. We are discussing ecosystems for learning digital resources, and maybe NDLA will take a role in developing a system where the teacher can find all necessary materials, whether it has it's licensed or it's open from NDLA, so it's easily accessible. One more important thing, in Norway, the counties have the same LMS systems and teams and it's learning, Canvas and whatever in order to organize their education. And so our goal is to be accessible so that the teachers and the students will have NDLA resources within their learning systems. So we have plugins to Teams or Canvas, for instance. You can search NDLA material and just put it in your system. So it's an API interface to the NDLA resources. So it's possible for also other companies in order to use our resources in their solutions as long as it's licensed correctly.
So this is only in this direction. So somebody else uses your material in their platform, but yes. you don't have any interface for some common providers or maybe some kind of marketplace for good material from others.
We are not there yet.
But this is kind of your plan? Did I get it right?
We don't have a concrete ambition, but we are. We think the counties in Norway will need an ecosystem, a common place where you can access materials. So this is maybe on the roadmap for what we want to do. We have also some other ambitions. Now, kind of trying to build a society for teachers to connect and add value to the stuff we have on NDLA. So if we can add some social mechanisms on this, the learning resources we have in NDLA, we think we can develop a more learning community for the teachers and students. And also trying to see ahead that the students need some more flexible course learning in the school, and we might be play a part in this scenario.
So how do you keep your learning material up to date? So is there somebody or some process that's always revising the material after period X, or do you just luckily find some part that has to be changed and say, okay, now please change it, or how's it going?
It's a combination. Of course, we have a plan for keeping our digital learning resources up to date. Now we are in the midst of learning reform in Norway, so we have even bigger budgets these 3 years in order to update our learning materials in a three-year period. And after that, we would like to open up for new courses and programs. And we also need to develop efficient models for keeping the content up to date. But then there are people that discover something wrong. They send a message to us, and so we can correct mistakes in cooperation with the users.
So do you have some kind of management for complaints or ideas to change the system?
We have a help desk, and we have a button on every side on NDLA where you can ask NDLA or send your comments to the content. We also use certain kind of services to monitor whether the students find what they are looking for, and they comment on sides, but this can be developed. So it's a continuous work to develop NDLA. It's far from perfect, but it's a modern platform built on Facebook technology, React, and it's kind of a modern platform, universal design, responsive design, but we have built it ourselves, and it is of course expensive, but this is also included in the budget and what we can do and deliver. So we are looking for partners to. It's important to also say that all we do is open source. All our software is on GitHub and can be downloaded, and we are of course looking for partners that would like to share expenses and try to develop things and tools that we are using further on.
So basically, a state like Bavaria could enter your project and say, let's work together on developing the platform. I think maybe it will be hard apart from a subject, Norwegian studies or something, to get your material used here. But nevertheless, I think to cooperate on development of the platform and the ideas, how to use it, it's something quite interesting.
Yeah.
Because I think we are quite away from the level you have already achieved. So we could learn something, but we can also probably use our resources and experience to also give you something that's bringing it forward.
Yes, I think you have a lot of economic muscles and competence that could really add to the value of this. It's a kind of way of thinking, and we have done some. We have proven that it can be successful, including teachers, and the way of thinking and working. But then we are looking for competence. We are looking for people to share investments for mutual profit. And we think this is something that the European Union should look into. So the idea of open source and strong communities working on open source will gain the society, I think, in the 21st century. And also learning across Europe have more similarities than differences. Developing standards for multilingual learning objects could really strengthen the core idea of the European Union, having taking care of the national cultures and languages, respect, and also combine it with modern technology for efficient use of public resources.
So for the moment, how many cooperations with other countries do you already have in your project?
This platform we have financed ourselves, but we have one project. There is something called the Global Digital Library, which is a United Nations project, providing an OER portal for the possibility of making children in the third world make them reading materials. Mm-hmm. And this platform is developed on the NDLA software code. And it was made possible through the Norwegian Development Directorate, and it's a connection with the Global Book Alliance. So this is also an example of how public spend money can give side effects, the spending of the money and also the way of thinking about OER. So we like to follow up on the UNESCO, and this is our, and it's also very meaningful for the organization, this being important part of a modern knowledge society. Then everyone should have equal access to knowledge. So as I would really like to cooperate with Bayern, I'm sure.
I mean, this already sounds quite inspiring. The projects like the global perspective is something we do not have at all in our system. I mean, even teachers usually don't have any exchanges to other countries when they are studying. Has there been any connection with Bavarian authorities or Ministry for Education yet?
We have to ask them to do something. we are part of a knowledge network in the European SchoolNet, and we have some sister organizations in, especially in Belgium. They have been the Flemish part of Belgium. They are, we are looking up to them. They are an organization called Klassement, They have been working on OER for quite a few years. I think our profile, our setup with the editorial, the editorial stuff, has made it that our resources have high quality and made for the students directly. Lots of OER resources are teachers sharing material between them. And as you mentioned earlier, that you have some stuff in the Mebus system and you are not sure about the quality. So I think that's maybe the unique thing about the NDLA project, that the setup of organization, the using of teachers, and teachers are very well qualified as input to making resources for colleagues. So that's maybe the most unique thing about NDLA, the setup and the way of cooperation between schools and the school authorities or the counties. They are trying to set up a similar NDLA for the 1 to 10 year in school. And I think it's even better idea, but the commercials are not very happy. And then the politicians are quite unsure if they have the courage to say, okay, we think this is a good idea. We want to try it out and we will still buy learning material in the market as well. It's one important alternative. It's not the total solution. Yes.
All questions are answered. I don't think so. But normally we have a length of 30 minutes for the podcast. We have now talked 1 hour.
Yeah, I know.
This is not a problem because it was very interesting. I thank you a lot for the exchange, for the discussion, and for the answering of the questions. Thank you a lot. I would love to visit you in Norway when this pandemic is over and look at what you're doing in person. So thank you a lot. And I wish you a very good day.
Yeah, thank you. And you're, of course, very welcome. Thank you. Yeah, thank you.